Okay, thanks for joining us at GoldSeek.com Radio. Today's special guest, Jeffrey Nichols, Senior Economist at Rosalind Capital. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back Jeffrey Nichols, Senior Economic Advisor to Rosalind Capital, at the helm with Marin Alexov. Welcome back, Jeffrey Nichols.
Happy to be here today. Thank you.
You penned an interesting article recently regarding the founders of this nation, their penchant for the yellow metal and for silver. You mentioned names that everyone will recognize: Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Hamilton, Franklin, Madison.
Today they'd all be thought of as gold bugs.
They tied the U.S. dollar to the value, and most of our listeners are aware of this, of around 370 ounces of silver and around 25 grains of pure gold. This bimetallic standard in the United States. Now we have neither. We have neither a gold nor a silver standard whatsoever. Why don't we start off with what their intentions were?
Well, I think their intentions were to protect the value of their savings and investments. I think that, you know, we had the continental dollar, which was the unit of currency that literally financed the revolution, but it was also a currency that was inflating quite rapidly. And the founding fathers knew that if they put their money in continental dollars, it wouldn't be worth much after a short period of time. And so they favored gold as a store of value, a reliable way to hold their assets and what wealth they had, those that did have wealth.
This was the currency forerunner of the U.S. dollar. Some of our listeners will be familiar with the term not worth a continental. Expenses incurred during war led to devaluation of the continental, to where, of course, runaway rampant inflation, similar to Venezuela, there were shortages of food. There's some really big implications of removing the dollar from the metal standard. So why don't we talk a bit more, though, about this bimetallic standard? You know, silver recently touched 75-1 on the gold-to-silver ratio, and this might actually be undervaluing silver relative to gold.
Well, actually, I think that quite the opposite. I think that silver is probably overvalued relative to gold because, after all, it remains today still principally an industrial metal, much more so than a investment metal. And as an industrial metal, it has to face the vagaries of how the economy performs. And I think the U.S. and the European and, in fact, the other major economies, China, Japan, India, are likely to have years of disappointing economic performance, and those who expect commodities, particularly metals, including silver, to do really well are going to be disappointed, I think, because the demand just isn't going to be there from the industrial side.
I see the industrial aspect as its greatest strength, that it's a monetary metal. Gold has virtually zero industrial demand, whereas silver has an inelastic industrial demand, making it the most, my personal opinion, undervalued asset in the history of mankind. And I would argue you would likely see a much closer ratio of 20-1 in the coming years. I mean, even if we put that all aside for a moment, we say we stay at the 75-1 ratio, I'm sure you'd agree that as gold appreciates, silver virtually appreciates.
I agree. Silver is going to do well in part because gold is doing well, and gold's appreciation over the next few years will spill over into the gold market, if you will. The large-scale investors who are buying gold are not as welcoming of silver.
Stanley Druckenmiller.
Soros. They're not looking at silver. They're looking at gold.
If I were a billionaire, as they both are, I would only be looking at gold. Why would I waste my time with something that's 75 times less expensive? I'd have to have, you know, a warehouse to store my silver and guards around the clock. Because from my perspective, it's precisely because the smart money is buying gold that silver will have much greater demand than gold, because there is a 10-1 ratio in the ground and above ground in reserves of gold to silver. And as the populace wakes up to inflation, it could very well return to its monetary status.
What's important to keep in mind also is that we're not looking at strictly a U.S. market. It's a global marketplace for these metals. And when we take into account the affinity for gold in India and China and other Asian economies, there's a strong predilection for gold that just isn't there for silver. And we're looking at these countries to be one of the factors that propel gold and along with it, silver higher too. But what they're really buying is gold, and their affinity is towards gold. I mean, for example, look at the central banks. Central banks have been buying gold, importantly, the Chinese, the Russians, a few others, but they're not interested in silver reserves. They're interested in gold reserves. I think that's all there is to say about it.
Take a look at India and China. They have a huge interest in silver, especially India. And as gold becomes more scarce and more expensive, silver could very well be the only way to invest in precious metals for the everyday investor, or not even investor, person on the street. But we both do and can agree that we will see silver and gold move higher in tandem.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the key here is that precious metals are going to perform very well over the decade ahead. And looking at gold, I think we're going to see record high prices to the extent that many investors are going to be surprised that gold could possibly move that high. And if you have a strong market for gold, you're going to have a strong market for silver. So we shouldn't really quibble over which is best or which is, you know, going to outperform. Let's just say that they're both going to do very well. They both are going to provide investors with a hedge against risks to financial markets. They're both a way of diversifying one's assets, and they're both offering protection should we have rising inflation and a weaker dollar.
I agree with you on the diversification qualities of the sector. I would highly recommend having close to an equal weighting of gold and silver, however you wish to make that ratio. That, of course, is up to the individual. I'd like to shift the discussion over to interest rates. You have touched on this a bit. Obviously, negative interest rates in Europe and Japan and now spreading around the world presents a best of world scenario for any asset which does not incur a rate penalty, which a savings rate does under a negative rate environment. Give us your thoughts here, please.
Well, first of all, I think it's important to look at what we call the real rate of interest, that is the nominal rate adjusted for inflation. And when you look at the real rate, we're already below zero interest rates. After adjustment for inflation, investors and savers who put their money in a bank account are losing real value. They're not seeing any appreciation in their underlying asset. And that's important to keep in mind because we could see and probably will see some rise at some point in the Fed funds rate and other short-term rates. But at the same time, you're going to see inflation beginning to accelerate, and hence the real rate of interest is going to be close to zero or even more likely somewhat negative in the next few years.
Can you give us some forward guidance regarding the Fed's actions? I mean, they've obviously backpedaled a bit on the rate hikes, and it looks as though we may not, according to the current Fed funds futures contract, see a rate hike this year.
We've been talking about that for as long as I can remember. I believe the U.S. and global economy is in what some economists call secular stagnation. And with a secular stagnation expectation, the Fed is going to be persistently disappointed forecasts of a recovering economy. It's going to feel at some point obliged to take new or greater steps towards monetary ease, trying to stimulate the economy out of the doldrums. And that's what is going to continue to present the possibility of higher inflation in the years ahead, even though people are looking at CPI, you know, barely moving. I think those of us who go grocery shopping know that there's certainly some underlying inflation. And if you look at the stock market, stocks are grossly inflated. Fine art is grossly inflated. Apartments here in New York City are greatly inflated. So in some sense, we already do have an inflation underway. It's an inflation of those selected assets that I just rattled off and some others. The dollar is, as a consequence, losing value. It's just that it's not terribly visible to most at the moment.
We obviously have this underlying trend, if you will, or bias of higher prices within everyday goods and services. That hurts those on fixed income the most, which is really a double blow.
The buying power of their savings is diminishing, and it's diminishing to some extent surreptitiously. It's sort of an invisible tax. Inflation has been called an invisible tax, and for those on fixed incomes or with retirement pensions, their assets are falling in real value. What they could buy yesterday was more than they can buy tomorrow.
If there weren't 47, 48 million food stamp holders, obviously we'd have many, many hungry folks and maybe even worse social conditions. But I'm curious if that is acting as a leveling mechanism to hold everyday goods and services at an artificial ceiling.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously there are too many Americans who are finding it difficult to make ends meet. And I think this is where the politics of it all comes in. The reason we've seen such a strong interest in Donald Trump, for example, or even Bernie Sanders at the other end of the extreme, is that so many Americans are dissatisfied with the status quo when it comes to their standard of living. And apart from a small minority, standards of living are generally declining. This is another aspect of the invisible inflation that's taking place. And so it's affecting the whole political and eventually the social fabric of America. And it's something that is going to have to be addressed one way or the other. It's either going to be addressed by more food stamps, if you will, or lower taxes. And you can take your choice. But in the end, whatever happens, I think gold, and for that matter, silver, since you brought it up earlier, are going to be assets that buck the trend and provide protection against inflation, whether it's inflation of financial assets and real estate or of consumer goods.
What odds would you put on a potential for a retest or even eclipsing the former bull market high for the yellow metal?
Oh, I think we're going to see it reach its historic peak possibly by year end or the first half of next year. And from there, we're going to start seeing gold make new highs, eventually rising to a multiple of the current price. But that's a 3, 5, 7 year forecast.
Exactly. So the idea here is obviously capitalize on these lower prices or discounted prices while they're here. Don't worry too much about the timing. And you also mention in some of your literature that you like a 5 to 10% portfolio ratio of precious metals. Tell us more, please.
Well, I think you want to have a basic foundation of gold with physical gold within a portfolio to protect it from depreciation of all sorts, particularly rising inflation, a weaker dollar, and financial risks offsetting weakness in the stock market and bond markets, for example. But there are times, and we may be at a time like that now, where risks are higher and the recommendation to buy gold might be larger. But importantly, what I'm talking about with the 5 to 10% rule is for that much in physical gold, preferably small bars and bullion coins, such as the American Eagle or the Maple Leaf or the Krugerrand. And that's a core investment that you want to have and hold. It's not for trading. If you're interested in trading, that comes on top of the 5 to 10%. And if you're interested in mining shares, that comes on top of the 5 to 10%. But you want to have that core position as an insurance policy. You hope and pray that you don't need it in the future, because if you do, it means that everything else is suffering. It's like buying insurance on a house is often the way it's presented. You buy insurance on a house and hope that you don't have a fire, not that you collect on the insurance.
But I would go one step further. I'd say it's enhanced insurance policy. But, you know, when we pay a monthly premium, for the most part, that premium disappears unless we collect. Even if your gold and silver insurance policies on your investment portfolio and your family's savings and all that you've worked for does not pay off, then you still have one of the most difficult to obtain substances on earth, which always over time maintains purchasing power and usually defeats inflation on a long-term basis. So any other topicality that might be relevant today?
I think it's important to remember that we're talking about a world market where India and China and a number of other countries play a very significant role. And what we've seen in the gold market in the last few years is a major shift of physical metal from Western investors, that's in the United States and Europe, the hedge funds and the institutions that are interested in gold. They have been generally sellers in the past few years, but we've moved into a period now where they're becoming buyers, not to make a quick gain, as a hedge fund portfolio manager might be interested, but as a long-term holding that they'll probably never sell. And they'll pass it along to their heirs. So it's not going to come back to the market the way an investment in the West might come back to the market, and indeed has come back to the market in recent months, quarters, and the last few years. And as a consequence, we're going to see prices move much higher than anybody today really anticipates, except for maybe a few of us.
Exactly. You know, the future very difficult to predict, but at the same time, we do have pockets of probability. The late Dr. Mandelbrot pointed out, you know, in chaos theory, and we certainly see some signs of very solid odds and probabilities on the upside. You talked about how in India, there is a strong tendency to procure metals and try to hold and maintain them within a family structure. But I'd also point out that, you know, temples, Buddhist temples, Hindu temples, have a tendency to use the metal on structures, on rooftops, on buildings, in within statues, within artwork, things of this nature that sometimes last for millennia. You can sell jewelry from China around the world, but for the most part, they do not encourage and block most gold exports from China.
I talk about it as being gold available supply. The available supply, that is gold that can come into the market, has been diminishing. Gold has been moving from available supply to unavailable supply, except at very high prices, that metal is removed. And as Westerners decide once again that maybe they want to hold a few more ounces, they're going to have to pay up at a higher price level than they might have previously imagined.
Any other contact information to share with the listeners?
Well, I think that the important thing is that Rosalind Capital is committed to providing precious metals, physical, to its customers at fair prices and with as much ease as possible. They like to see an educated consumer and investor, and that's one of the reasons why we write the Rosalind Gold and Silver Commentaries every few weeks, so that the investors are educated about some of the thoughts we've talked about today. Nice being with you, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
Goldseek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.